So continuing in Canto 7, Chapter 11, Text 29 of The Perfect Society for Social Classes. Translation. The woman who engages in the service of her husband, following strictly in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune, surely returns home back to Godhead with her devotee husband and lives very happily in the Vaikuntha planets. Purport. The faithfulness of the goddess of fortune is the ideal for a chaste woman. In the Brahma Samhita 529 says, Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasam Brahmase Vyamanam. In the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu is worshipped by many, many thousands of goddesses of fortune. And in Golok Vrindavan, Lord Krishna is worshipped by many, many thousands of gopis, all of whom are goddesses of fortune. A woman should serve her husband as faithfully as the goddess of fortune. A man should be an ideal servant of the Lord, and a woman should be an ideal wife like the goddess of fortune. Then both husband and wife will be so faithful and strong that by acting together they will return home back to Godhead, without a doubt. In this regard, Srila Madhavacharya gives his opinion. Harir asmin stita iti strinam bhartari bhavana shishyanam cha gurau nityam shudranam brahmanadishu prityanam swamini tatha hari bhava udiritaha. A woman should think of her husband as the Supreme Lord. Similarly, a disciple should think of the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A Shudra should think of a Brahmana as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a servant should think of his master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, all of them will automatically become devotees of the Lord. In other words, by thinking this way, all of them will become Krishna conscious. So here this is a important point of understanding the representation of the Lord in the devotees and in the particular natures that are there. Because the Lord is pervading everything. Everything is actually functioning by the Lord's grace. Now, I say, the Lord, through His energies, has entered into everything, and therefore everything moves and has some potency or life. Life comes from life. So if you see any movement in the material world, you see any power, potency, or quality, that is all coming from the Supreme Lord. So that is the Supreme Lord in that thing. So now, here is just the basic principles. We're supposed to be able to see the Lord in everything. Every atom, between every atom, every element, every activity that happens, whatever goes on, any movement we have. But this becomes very much easier as we approach the platform, the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And especially, or beginning stages in the Madhyama platform, then it is much easier to see things according to knowledge. Then one is seeing all things that happen as knowledge. So there's nothing that's just plain. The mat here, we're sitting on a mat, but this represents the earth, the potency to hold up. Because we're sitting on this, we're being held up by this mat. Right? Then that is then fully manifest in the earth. Because the earth then is holding up everything. But that holding up is the Adhara Shakti of the Lord, to accommodate things, to hold things. That is coming from Ananta. Ananta is the expansion of the Lord, right? Of Narayana. Narayana is expansion of Balaram. Balaram is an expansion of Krishna. Right? So, therefore, we see everything in relationship to the Lord. Right? Just like on the house, you have so many columns that hold up the roof. So the power to hold the roof up, that is potency, is coming from Balaram. Right? Because Ananta holds all the universes on his head, all the planets on his heads. Right? He's holding up all anything big through his Adhara Shakti. So the Lord's potency is there. You know? If there's a permanence to anything, that is the Lord. Because the Lord Himself, being the eternal original person. That principle of eternality is coming from him. It's one of his energies, the Sandini potency. So if anything has some lasting, it means it has more of that aspect to it. If someone something doesn't, then not. So one can see the Lord's potency in anything if one has that kind of vision and training. So as a basic principle, just on the cultural platform, without being very advanced like that, then these things are put in here, that one should see the potency of the Lord there in whatever's the situation. It's a very, very important principle. Without it, many, 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 many thousands of devotees are bewildered, because when they hear the prayer Shakshat Dhari Tvena Samasta Shastre, they were saying, if the person is not Nitya Siddha, you know, Parishad of the Lord, then you're a schnook. And if you're a schnook, you don't represent the Lord at all. But even in the nastiest materialistic person, the Lord is there as the fire of digestion. Right? If he's doing any movement that's coming from the life airs, and Krishna says he's the potency behind these life airs. Right? The power to speak, any of the organs, that's coming from the Lord. Memory is coming from the Lord. Intelligence is coming from the Lord. The karmis are very intelligent. So intelligence is coming from the Lord. If they have any memory, that's coming from the Lord. So many aspects of the Lord one can see in just the ordinary, mundane person. And the advanced sage can see even in the dog eater, the elephant, the elevated brahmana and saintly person. So if all of that is there, and then devotees become bewildered because it says Shakshad Hari Tvena, and then I don't see him as Shakshad Hari Tvena, so therefore they can't be, right? What is my vision is the actual eternal principle. That's what they're saying. Someone else can't be a representative of the Lord. Why? Because I can't see it. And I am the stopped standard of seeing. Isn't it? So because I cannot see with the vision of Shakshad Hari, therefore no one can be. Right? That's the point. Right? That's the point. So it's either, so this is the dichotomy, is the other person can't be Shakshad Hari, but I am Shakshad Hari in my vision. Because I see perfectly according to the scriptures and the eyes of the Lord. Right? This is what is mentioned in the scriptures. Right? According to your level of advancement, you can understand others in that way. So if you're not very advanced, you can't see the Lord present in even ordinary living entities, let alone in advanced personalities. So because of not understanding this simple point, then the principle of authority, and especially spiritual authority, becomes compromised to the severe point that devotees cannot function properly in their devotional life. They can't have the faith in which the whole process starts. If faith is weak, the devotional process acts on a very low level, because faith is the first principle. Everything is based on faith. Advancement is faith. Prema means your faith is complete. Right? When I have a little bit of faith, that's called Shraddha. When that faith becomes greater, that I feel like engaging associating with those who are interested in devotional service, that's called Sadhusanga. When my faith is greater, that I feel that now I want to do those activities like the sadhus, that's called Bhajana Kriya. When I understand that in my performance of devotional service, I have to be conscious, right? Krishna consciousness. The movement's called Krishna consciousness. I want to be conscious of what's going on and actually try to remove those obstacles that keeps my bhajan from being steady. Then that's called anatta dhambriti. When there's some success, my faith has come to the point where I have very fixed faith in the process of devotional service. So anarthas have been removed. That's called nishta. When my faith in the name is so much more great that I see this is non-different from Krishna, so I have a taste, this is called ruchi. When my faith increases more where I'm just so attached to Krishna, that's called asakti. when the faith is even more that this is Krishna, then the budding stages of prema start, and it's called bhava. And when that matures, that faith deepens to the point where it becomes like an ocean, then that's called prema. And then from there it deepens even more, and there's no need to talk about that, because that's not something we'll be able to experience in this particular form. Right? You can experience that in this transcendental form. The material form can't experience beyond it. It means not that the material form is experiencing, it means the living entity cannot function on that platform within this body. You know, it just doesn't, body can't handle it. So, it's all faith. So if the faith is weak, right, after Shraddha comes Sadhu Sangha. So if in our Sadhu Sangha it's very meager, we cannot respect devotees. We cannot have faith in them. We cannot see the qualities of God in them. Then bhajana kriya cannot be taking place in a very serious manner. Anartha nivritti, even a less manner. Nishta, definitely not. Right? So it's such a fundamental principle to be able to see the Lord in everything. And at least to see the qualities of the Lord in the devotees. But if you can't do that, then at least socially one must respect the Lord's potency. Right? On the barest level. So therefore the woman should think of her husband as the Supreme Lord. Because the Lord protects. The Lord gives shelter. The Lord gives maintenance. This is what the Lord does. Right? The Lord shows that care for us, that He comes with us and He lives with us, He stays in the heart, right? So the husband is living with the wife and goes through all whatever experiences are there. So that potency is the potency of God, right? The living entity is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, right? But that's not what we married. When we get married, we don't marry the soul. No question, the soul is not up for marriage. The conditioned material body and subtle body, the gross and subtle body, they're available for marriage. The soul is not available for marriage. Right? It's just not available. So, in the material world, one is marrying the gross and subtle conditioned nature. So that is not the living entity anyway. That is the Lord's energy. It is functioning by the Lord's energy. It is moving by the Lord's energy. Right? Everything's happening by the Lord's energy. So just that the husband is doing these activities, that is the Lord's potency anyway. So therefore, the wife then remembers the Lord by seeing those qualities in the husband. She sees them in the that the Lord is protecting me, but it's coming through the agency of this husband. The Lord is maintaining me. It's coming through this husband. Right? The Lord is guiding in what to do, what not to do. It is coming through this husband. Right? Like that. And then we can practice our abilities of meekness and humbleness and the activities of identifying as a devotee. Right? So all these things of surrender that are there, we can see in the qualities that the Lord manifests through the husband. So even if we can't see in a great philosophical, at least if we respect and deal in this way, the benefit is gained. The benefit is gained. Similarly, a disciple should think of the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the knowledge means the Veda. Knowledge is the Lord, as he mentioned right in the very beginning. That the Lord the Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. Right? On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. So, to see that this is going on, we see this. So this knowledge is coming from the Lord. This knowledge is coming from the Lord. So that is what the spiritual master gives, is the knowledge. So that knowledge is coming from Krishna. Therefore, we see the Lord in the spiritual master. Right? Because he gives Divya Gyan. The Divya Gyan is coming from the scriptures, coming from the sadhus, coming from his spiritual master. So that, giving us that knowledge, the Lord has come to us through this person. We have to remember this. Right? Is that the Lord is in our heart. He's always telling us what to do, what not to do. And we don't listen. Because of our heavy material conditioning, we're not interested. Right? We're not interested. So therefore, we don't listen. And when we become interested to know something more, we still have this heavy conditioning, so we can't see the Lord in the heart. We can't speak with him directly because of our conditioning. So the Lord has to come to us in a form that we can see. Right? So therefore he comes as the spiritual master. Just like we want to worship the Lord, we can't see the Lord in his pure spiritual form. We see matter. Therefore the Lord comes to us seemingly in the form of matter as the Archamurti. But this is directly the Lord. That's why it says that one who sees the deity or the spiritual master, the deity is stone and the spiritual master is an ordinary person, they're possessed of hellish intelligence. So hellish intelligence wasn't one of the qualities mentioned of a human being, and it's definitely not mentioned as the qualities of Brahman, and even more, it's not mentioned as a quality of a devotee. So being possessed of hellish intelligence, this is the demoniac nature. So the whole idea is that in the Kali Yuga, everybody has both the demon and devotee within themselves. Right? Doubts and misgivings, this is the demoniac side. So then we try very much to overcome these things. You know? We try very much to bring ourselves above these things. So that is done by sadhu sangha. So if we can't appreciate the sadhus and see that Krishna has come to us through these sadhus, right? Whatever may be the situation, you know? Whatever may be the situation, whoever they may be, then what are we going to do? How are we going to become purified? We only give up anarthas and all that basically by associating with devotees. If it was a matter of gyan, the Mayavadis would have been pure a long time ago. But gyan on its own doesn't purify anybody. Gyan is studied by those who are pure. So factually, only the devotee can follow the path of gyan by studying the shastras, understand more about his position and act on it. The impersonalists actually can't, because they can't purify themselves by the process of study. You purify yourself by the process of performing activities in relationship with the Lord. So if one can't see the Supreme Lord has come to us through the devotees, why just the spiritual master? Also any senior devotee who gives us knowledge, any devotee who we see and gives a good example in anything. Right? So we have to be able to see that element there. If we're going to work on the principle, until I see someone 100% who everything is 100% perfect, then I can say this is the representing the Supreme Lord and I can take example from here. We're going to be in the material world a long time. Because while Srila Prabhupada was here, how many people actually understood his position and took advantage of it? Prabhupada, so many people met Prabhupada. How many recognized? So it's only by the Lord's grace. And if we're not proper in our behavior, the Lord may remove that grace by which we can actually understand the position of devotees. Right? It's very clearly said in the Shastra. Someone who offends devotees, doesn't understand properly, the Lord will remove that ability to see them, to appreciate why devotees, the whole devotional process. Right? Therefore, it is said, sadhu ninda is the first thing to avoid in chanting the holy name, because from there everything else comes. Sadhu ninda is there, then that means we don't actually understand the qualities of the Lord, the supremacy of the Lord. Right? We think that this person can act outside of the Lord's abilities. So if there's anything good there, that's only coming from the Lord. Right? So there must be some good quality in a devotee. And if we can't see it, then that's very unfortunate. So the disciple should think of the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he represents, right? Just like, you know, the leaders of one country, when the viceroy of the king comes from another country, you have to deal with that viceroy or that ambassador, you know, or secretary of state as representing that country. If you don't, you just treat them like you feel they are as persons, right? The viceroy comes, and you go, oh, Lord Mountbatten, well, he's just a guy, I know him, you know, his father did this, and he did that, and, you know, and I saw him, you know, doing this, and like that. So you deal with him like that, then one would have to be very ignorant of just how things run to not understand what the consequences will be. So you deal with him improperly, that displeases the king, whom he represents. Because we are not able to see the king directly. We are not able to see the Lord directly. So he sends his representatives. He, in other words, through the devotees, through the preachers, he comes to us. He comes through so many preachers. And then from amongst them, we get attracted to somebody and we follow them. And that becomes our main source where we see the Lord coming to us. So if we can't see this and we reject them because of their external qualities that we perceive, you know, we're not talking about seeing bad means necessarily, how you say, obvious bad qualities that everybody will agree on. We're talking about just the principle that we can't accept that unless someone's a Nitya Siddha, that they can represent the Lord. Right? Is this understood here? It means somebody may have bad qualities. Those are bad qualities. But it doesn't mean that when good qualities are being manifest, that that doesn't represent the Lord. Because every devotee who properly follows in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, under their own acharya, then is representing to the Lord to some degree or another. Some degree or another. Even if it's a little bit. Otherwise, where is the potency that we met on the street or in the college or wherever we met some devotee who may have been in the movement few weeks, sometimes few days, few months, few years, and they said, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, come to the temple. You know, who? Everybody who is present today met Prabhupada. Everyone who became a devotee when Prabhupada is present personally met Prabhupada and then saw, yes, here is the pure Nitya Siddha devotee and came to the temple and became a devotee then? Or they met the representatives of Srila Prabhupada and became a devotee. So, if that process is going on, that we were turned from the mundane path to Krishna consciousness just by a temple devotee, not even necessarily one of the main preachers or the temple president, you know, or some, you know, sannyasi, just temple devotee. And one of the brahmacharis, one of the brahmacharinis, you know, out distributing BTGs or whatever. Then if that potency is working through them, then why it can't work through anybody who sincerely takes up the message? So the point is one must be able to see the Supreme Lord there present, whether it's small or whether it's big. Right? If 50% of the Lord's potency is managed, we have to be able to see that 50% and identify that as the Lord's mercy. If it's 1%, we have to be able to see that 1%. That's a devotee. The devotee sees the 1% that one represents the Lord. The non-devotee sees the 99% that we're not. In fact, the devotee is, non-devotee is so expert, they'll say 100% they don't represent. Right? We must remember that it is not that obvious, the good qualities of devotees. We should not be so proud of our abilities. When Krishna was personally present, people could not understand he was God. Shishupal couldn't understand he was God. Kamsa couldn't understand he was God. You know, the qualified, you know, Shrotriya Brahmanas that lived in Vrindavan, they took birth in Vrindavan, remember, the transcendental realm, the spiritual sky, where Krishna was personally present. And Krishna and Balaram begged some food from them, and they refused, saying, no, we're offering this in sacrifice. We're not giving it to you kids. Right? But the wives of those Brahmins, they understand, no, here's Krishna and Balaram. You know? What's the use of all this big... The big sacrifice is to please them. So they just took the stuff and directly offered it. Then, by that association, then the Brahmins understood. By seeing the example that they did, that don't be... fooled, that they became now devotees from seeing... No, they saw Krishna Balaram already rejected them. But by the association of the devotees, meaning their own wives, and seeing that example, then they became advanced. They didn't know what was going on. Right? So if these persons cannot even understand the Lord, let alone us, coming from unqualified, you know, untrained backgrounds, and now suddenly we can understand what are good qualities of the devotees. So we have to be very, very careful that the mind doesn't trick us into just seeing bad qualities of devotees, and we're not able to understand this simple principle that Madhvacharya puts forward. Is that we have to respect these personalities because they represent certain aspects of the Lord's potency. Not every aspect. Vyasadeva is an incarnation of the Lord. Why? Because he does everything? All aspects of Krishna? No, only one. His literary aspect. Prithu, for his managerial aspect. Like that. Parasaram, for the Lord's fighting aspect. Right? So like this, different personalities, they manifest different aspects of the Lord. That's called Shaktyavesh. So when it's manifest in a very great way, grand way, then we call them a Shakti Veshavatar. But we have to understand the Lord's Shakti is running everything. So we have to be able to see the Lord's qualities in everything. If we can't, we say it's too difficult, okay, but then we must realize we're not on that advanced platform. So the spiritual master must be seen as this. For whatever it is, just that we have become devotees, we are advancing in devotional service. We're still in devotional service. Means some kind of connection must be there. Some kind of potency is coming. Right? So we must be advanced enough to be able to see a little bit of the Lord's qualities in everything. So therefore, the process is started like this. Right? The process is started like this. The wife sees it in the husband, then from there it expands. She sees it in everything in the house and sees it in all people. And this way she becomes a pure devotee. The disciple sees it in the spiritual master, then is able to see it in the spiritual master's God brothers, God sisters, and then their own God brothers and God sisters, then in all the devotees, and then in all the activities. And this way it expands, and then they become Krishna conscious. But it has to start somewhere. And then a Shudra should think of a Brahmana as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Brahmana speaks and represents the Lord, is the mouth of the Lord, so he speaks the Lord's knowledge and eats on behalf of the Lord. So from this aspect, they represent the Lord. And a servant should think of the Master, because in all of these, then one is being guided, protected, and benefited. And so then we understand is that all this actually just comes from Krishna. Right? The potency in the husband to guide, protect, shelter, that's all coming from Krishna. This way we're able to turn our attention to Krishna. Right? But that doesn't mean that the proper respect is not there. Right? We see them as the representing the Supreme Lord, but this is a catalyst to remember the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
Whereas nowadays in the practical life, we can see that difficulty that if Mataji is being initiated by a spiritual master and she is married, then sometimes there is some friction between what to follow, the husband or the spiritual master, because not necessarily that the two are semi the same instructions. So in a practical way, what is the advice for in that case?
The real practical way is that husband and wife should be dealing with the spiritual master together. This whole concept where the wife just wants to go on her own and spend time alone with the spiritual master, that wouldn't be done before, because she's given 50% of her body to the husband. So that means if she goes alone, only 50% gets instructed. Like that. So the practical point is that we're not trained. So therefore all these problems come up. You know? First of all, are we looking for someone who is Krishna conscious? That's the one thing. Husband's looking for a Krishna conscious wife, wife for a Krishna conscious husband. Or is it just the modes of nature making the arrangement? Right. And secondly, is that traditionally the spiritual master didn't necessarily even deal with the wife. He would deal with the husband. Husband and wife would be able to deal properly together, that the whatever questions were there, then the husband could go and ask them, then share them with the wife. Or the husband and wife could go together. But you wouldn't have the wife going on her own.
So the proper etiquette is that whatever problem is, they go either together, or she follows the husband, if she is capable of transmitting the knowledge, the shiksha, to her from the spiritual master.
Yeah. And they should be serious. One may say, well, husband can't do that. Well, why did you marry the guy? And if they say, well, that's all that was available, then don't complain. You know? There's a South Indian saying amongst the women. And it's not a general saying, it's the women's saying. If you marry a ghost, then you have to live in a tamarind tree. Because ghosts live in tamarind trees. So if you marry a ghost, don't expect you're going to live in a palace. No, you're going to live in a tamarind tree. So you get what you marry. You know? You don't marry a bum and then expect you're going to be a billionaire. You know? Whatever you marry, that's what you get. Because they, according to their nature, can only provide and deal in so many ways. That's why before they were so careful about checking the character. Nowadays, all that's necessary is that, you know, the hormonal vibes match. You know? When you put a boy and a girl together, then certain hormones work, and they seem to be attracted to each other. So in their mind, it's perfect, you know. But it doesn't necessarily, somehow or another, it's a very mysterious process, that the hormones only keep working as long as nothing is fixed or solid, you know. But as soon as you say, yes, definitely they'll be married, and as soon as they are married, then suddenly these hormones have a strange way of just kind of like evaporating. You know? And then the reality of who you have married suddenly stares you in the face. You know? It's one of the expert tricks of Maya. She's very, very expert at this. And she does it, you know, unless there's some process by which one goes through and ascertains the qualities of the other party, either oneself or through others, then Maya does this with everybody. You know? You can ask anybody. Right? There was one South Indian, he's a boy here from a South Indian Brahmin family, and he was talking with his mother about marriage. You know, or let's say it was the other way around. You know, mothers always want to know when the boy is going to get married, you know, and he was talking this and that. She said, listen, you know, that the honeymoon is over when the wife gets pregnant. Then you're down to reality. So you might as well start with reality now and understand what are the responsibilities in marriage, you know, so that you know what you're doing and you're trained. Right? So there would be a much more consciousness that there is something here. It is a very serious duty and commitment. And so then that mood would be there before marriage. But nowadays it's just you feel like getting married and that's your qualification. Right? My qualification for being a grihastha is that I want to get married. Right? And then you get married and then, you know, the only qualification you have now for running the marriage is that I'm married. Because I'm married, therefore I'm expert at running marriages, right? And then I have children. My expertise in raising children is just because I've had them, right? And my particular attachment for them. And therefore, we can do everything perfectly, right? I mean, you know, animals raise their kids due to the same way. They're attached and they raise them nicely. Of course, they create dogs and hogs and camels and asses, you know, but they do it well. You know, dogs always make dogs, you know, always first-class dogs. They always do the same thing, sniff nicely, bark and run around. But the point is the Vedic culture was an idea is that if you had plans to get married, then well before marriage, you would be planning and working towards that. I mentioned this in, you know, some class a long time back. That same Brahmin boy, when it was arranged for his marriage and he was engaged to a girl. So the girl was 11 at the time. And they'd sometimes get a little time together when one family would visit the other. You know, just in the side, where everybody else is, that sometimes she would come up to him and say, you have to get serious, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of responsibilities to take care of and all that. So you have to be, determined and strong and all these things. So now you have to start getting serious. So this is an 11-year-old girl telling the boy that, you know, you should start getting it together now so that when we get married, that the whole thing will work nicely. You know, you won't be a lazy bum. You know, you'll be able to get out there and do things. So now that 11-year-old girl can only understand this about marriage if she's been trained like this from much earlier by her mother. So this is human life. Humans means you actually understand what's going on. If you're just bewildered by what happens this moment to moment, that's animal life. Because that's just the modes of nature. The human understands what's going on. We may not understand what exact trick the modes are going to do today. You know, that's always the unique feature of Maya. She's so expert. You know, what insanity will reign in today's, you know, material activities. But we know the workings of the material world. We know what is necessary to get through it and what we must do. So that kind of, that aspect must be there. So the practical thing is that if devotees are finding difficulty, then they should try to understand what is the cause of the difficulty. The cause of the difficulty is not understanding how the material nature works and understanding how Krishna works. Right? That's why it said, vidyam cha vidyam cha. You must study avidya and vidya side by side. Why? Because the avidya is controlled by God. So you know God is a person and you know how God acts through his energies in the material nature. Because we're conditioned by that material nature. So we have to learn how to break that attachment. So without studying avidya, we won't know how to break away from avidya. And without studying vidya or knowledge of the Lord, then how are we going to get out of the material world? Because you have to be attracted to something. You can't get out of one place unless you want to go to someplace else. Right? The impersonalists don't want to go anywhere. They just want to not be attracted by the material world. But how long can they do that? So you get out of the material world by being attracted to Krishna and detached from Maya. So you one must see both. That's why the acharyas recommend both. If someone just studies about, reads about Krishna and Krishna's lila, unless they're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, it's very difficult to be successful because they'll be overwhelmed by their material qualities. So you must know how Maya works so that you can overcome it. You must know that. Right? So therefore, if we find things don't work, then we must learn what is the process so they can do. It's never too late. I mean, we've been in the material world since time immemorial. So, okay, we weren't born into great families. We haven't heard so much nice things. We haven't practiced. But it's never too late, right? I mean, we've already been here in unlimited lifetimes of Brahma. You know, what's a few more years? You know? Okay, nice if we had figured this out 20, 30 years ago, but even if we didn't, we figured it out today, then that's success. And at least from today, now we'll try to make positive steps on how to make everything go. Right? But the positive step starts from changing the mentality. When the mentality is correct, then all the activities will follow. So it doesn't matter what is the difficult situation you find yourself in, there's always something you can do to become Krishna conscious. Does that make any sense? Yes?
Well, sometimes married couples have a concept that the spiritual master should have no say in the marriage or what they call it. Here and there. So that seems to be quite a prevalent concept that, oh, when it gets to marriage, then somehow or other the spiritual master should not be involved with the kind of hands-off thing, our private life, we shouldn't interfere. So what did you say about that?
Yeah, well, there's that one aspect is that day-to-day life, it's not really the business of the spiritual master to get involved. At the same time is, then along with that, is that the spiritual master should not be blamed, or a leading devotee should not be blamed for how people's personal life does go. You can't tell them stay out of our life, but at the same time is put the blame on how our life doesn't work on the other person. So there has to be responsibility taken somewhere. Someone may say, well, leaders have said this, that, so many things. Certain aspects are there. But still, if you look in the history of, you know, even just the material world or the history of the devotees, right? Lord Chaitanya was living with his devotees in Navadvipa. Navadvipa was being managed by Muslims. Muslims were not very favorable to Krishna consciousness. The Smarta Brahmins who were there were even more unfavorably disposed to Krishna consciousness, you know, more than the Muslims, right? This is the atmosphere in which they had to live, right? So even in that atmosphere, they're going on day to day, right? So what some senior devotee says, the spiritual master, the temple president, some sannyasi, does that have anything to do with the tone of voice in which you speak to the husband or wife? Or the sensitivity in which you deal with them? Right? Even if we're very busy and we only have, let's say, an hour or 2 hours together in a day, but what is the quality of that 1 or 2 hours? Right? When we speak quality time, we have to define what is quality time. Right? Quality time means the sensitivity to be able to help each other in their Krishna conscious pursuits. Right? Through the medium of whatever is going on in their life. So that aspect always has some interest. It means the wife is supposed to be Dharma Patni. That means she knows Dharma. So there's always something to be gained in Dharma from the scriptures and from the spiritual master. And the husband is supposed to be Guru Pati, or one who guides according to the scriptures in the household life. So surely there's something that can always be learned in the way of scriptural things. As far as day to day, you know, what furniture or what kind of refrigerator you buy, or whether you buy, you know, a Finley dhoti, or you buy a Mafatlal dhoti, or a, you know, Puri dhoti, or a South Indian dhoti, or a handloom dhoti, or I don't think that's what we're getting involved in. You know, I don't think the spiritual master is getting involved whether the man, you know, pisses on the toilet seat or not, or that he leaves his socks laying around the house. You know, and I'm sure that these have much more influence on breaking up marriages than a lot of other things that are said. You know, like that. So, you know, what does that mean, stay out of our personal life? You know, does that just mean, you know, being encouraged to come to Mangalartik, or, you know, not be too materialistic, you know, try to find a balance between your maintenance of yourself and also your Krishna conscious development? I mean, if these are interferences, then that's fine. But then we should also understand that according to Bhagavatam, that's called a Griha Medhi. And if we just recognize we're on that position, and take the humble position that we're too fallen to be able to take advantage of these things, then that's fine. You know, but otherwise it's you know, things, let's say we take a point which may be more relevant, you know, having a child. Now, one, having a child is not just a matter of, you know, how you say, mechanically one can have a child, but can one raise a child? Is one mature and responsible enough? Does one have the Krishna conscious training to raise a Krishna conscious child? So the spiritual master may or may not. Most probably couldn't care less and don't want to get involved. But some may say one is qualified or one is not. Right? It's very common, you read in the scriptures, that they would take permission before getting married and having children. Then you want to have a child, still you have to pick a proper auspicious time for Garbhodan Samskar. So unless one is one a very expert astrologer oneself, one must approach somebody to get a proper time. So in any case, there's still going to be some regulation there. Are you qualified to have the children? And then picking the right time to have the children. So one has to, from all sides, there has to be an understanding of what's going on. Those who are in leading positions should know how much they can get involved and how much not to get involved. And those in dependent or following positions should understand, you know, what their responsibilities are also. Otherwise, you don't have relationships. Yes.
But it seems also one is taking diksha, what's the meaning of that? One is giving one's life, actually, or oneself, to the service of the spiritual master, Krishna. It's just the banana being sacrificed. Fire rips you. The old self, there's a new self being born. So in light of that, one would surely feel that the spiritual master is a very preeminent. Because he's the one that's taking the karmic burden, he's the one that's actually undertaking to take his Jivas back to Godhead. So, in other words, why then should it be a closed area of one's life? And does one actually have a private life? Is there such a thing as a private life when one's taking diksha?
No, the Griha Medhi has private life, because that's the point. Is this part of my life has nothing to do with Krishna. Right? But a devotee is, my whole life is for Krishna. But due to my conditioning, I am serving Krishna and purifying myself through the activities of the Grihastha Ashram. So by having children, I will purify myself. Because I have these attachments Therefore, if I have these attachments and it's my own private life, I'll do it how I like and no one should get involved, then where's the purification? Because then we're doing it for ourselves. But if it's, I have these attachments, so now let me, according to Krishna's directions, according to the directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, how am I supposed to conceive this child, raise this child, deal with this child? Then I'm going to become purified through doing that. Then it's service. If I conceive a child according to Krishna's rules, it's service. If I raise the child according to Krishna's rules, that is service. But if I just say, you know, listen, this is my personal business, then that means we're on our own to do things how we think it'll be done. The result is ours, the fruit is ours, everything is ours. But unfortunately, if we remember back, there is such a thing as God, and he is actually running the show, and the material nature actually moves everything. We simply desire. So I desire to have a child, and if it's for Krishna, Krishna will arrange that I'm able to do it through those systems that are pleasing to Krishna. And if not, then the modes of nature will just arrange that they're done through passion and ignorance. Because following duty is goodness. If one's not following duty, one cannot be in goodness. One may be influenced by goodness, like a cow. The cow's body is influenced by goodness. I mean, how it is. They eat simple things. You know, they're very, very gentle in their behavior. They sleep very little. You know, their affection for the calves are very great. Like this. It's very that. But the living entity, the jiva, in the cow's body is in the mode of ignorance. Right? Because they're in an animal's body. They don't know what's going on. They just think they're a cow. You know? So the soul is in ignorance, so the gross and subtle bodies are in goodness. You know, influenced by at least a major portion of goodness. Within the ignorance, they have a predominance of goodness. Right? Because nothing's ever 100%. Krishna mentions, the modes are never, it's never 100%. If it's pure goodness, that's what it's called, and that's transcendental. Otherwise, material goodness has passion and ignorance in it. Right? Ignorance has some passion and goodness in it. So when there's a prominence of goodness, but still enough ignorance to keep one in an animal's body, then one is a cow. You know? Like that. So in this whole process, then if we are attached to doing it ourselves, but factually it's Krishna doing it anyway, but he's doing it through the modes of nature. And in these modes of nature, it's doing it under the control of Maya. But if you do it for Krishna, then even though it's the modes of nature pushing things around, it's under the control of Yoga Maya. Therefore, we get a purifying and a transcendental result. That's what it says in the Gita. The brahmachari is purified by controlling the senses. The grihastha is purified by engaging the senses in the sense objects. Because he sees this is Krishna. Therefore, the grihastha has to be quite advanced, actually, to be a good grihastha. Otherwise, it's not easy to remember Krishna when one's engaging the senses. So that takes training, that they know this is Krishna. So basically, that kind of statements are statements by untrained people. They may say, well, in the past, so many senior people have messed up people's lives. But, I mean, I may be wrong, but out of the 5 billion people on the planet, how many people are, you know, spiritual members of the ISKCON movement giving advice to? Right? And how many of those people have terrible married lives? Right? I mean, if 3 out of 4 marriages in America fail, and that's the karmis, I don't see any senior devotees involved in their lives. Right? So that may not be the real cause. Of course, it's an easy scapegoat, right? The unpurified mentality naturally wants to blame it on somebody. And then it makes it life very easy. It's this one's fault, that one's fault. Oh, my marriage fell apart because the temple president, this one, that one. And they have influence. But people under much worse conditions can keep marriages together. I mean, there's people living in the streets of Calcutta and they run very nice married lives. You know? They may not be overly opulent, you know. But life goes on. Like that. No divorce. Why are you smiling? You know, I mean, these are general points. There's always specific details. But the main point is the influence. Anyway, Prabhupada says so many times that once you get married, your problems in marriage are not, they shouldn't be taken to the spiritual master. Like that. So the day-to-day problems, they are the problem of the grihastha. Right? At the same time, as if there's spiritual points to be made, that in one's life, that maybe one is not utilizing the grihastha ashram to the best way in Krishna's service, then advice might be very much appreciated if someone really wants to advance. Of course, those leading devotees have to be able to know how to engage these activities, you know, and what it means. But I would say that it's not that the devotees in general really had a great idea how to run grihastha ashram, and then you had some fanatic leaders who had zero idea, and they messed it all up. I think it would be much more honest to say that you had a whole group of grihasthas that had no idea of what it meant for grihastha life, and you had leaders that, you know, were not much more informed. And the combination then would make for problem. Right? Because Prabhupada was informed, but then still people had difficulty. Right? And we see people who are informed, even if their authorities aren't informed, they're able to keep their marriages together. So it would appear that, one, there must be a balance. The ideal is both. But if the devotees in general are informed. So then one may say, well, unless the leaders train us, then how we will be informed? So then that brings us right back to the beginning. So then therefore they shouldn't say that the spiritual master can't say anything. Yes?
One time Giriraj Maharaj was pointing out that Sannyasi is actually the instructor for He brought out a very good point. He said, even if you perform Garbhadharma, especially if you see a child, that if some years later you don't want to actually put in all the energy and responsibility and time to raise a child, but you want to dump that child either on the temple authorities or on Gurukul, somehow disregard that. And he said, you're still looking at Varnasanta. If you don't want to take care of that child, as a parent, so that's still unlike the project. Then you may have tried to put them around for a similar thing. But some years down the road, that child is actually still unwanted. It's going to start feeling unwanted. And this is all the causes, problem in society. So don't pride yourself on, oh, being challenging, you know, to feel good this and that, and then 3-4 years down the road, it's too troublesome, the energy level would be disproportionate, you know, and it's just too much effort. And then your child is still coming out. And the Prime Center has to actually pay for it.
Yeah, that's a very nice point.
And then he said, why should actually be, if the lesson is there for you as a helpful, how will you get the lesson? Because the society has to play the role. The society gets you all your problems. Because they have to bring you to the project. And how are you learning the lesson? How are you getting to it from the household?
Yeah, no, very nice. Very nice. Very nice point. Main thing is that it must be a nice, we have to try to develop the good spirit of cooperation. If that spirit is there, because that's just Prabhupada's one of his last instructions, is just how well we can cooperate. So that cooperation, there has to be some way that we can create an atmosphere of cooperation. And so that cooperation is, there must be common platform, you know, of activities, of values. So that has to be, you know, Prabhupada's books, you know, Prabhupada's teachings, and those teachings of the acharyas, and the example of the acharyas, and the Lord and his devotees that are cited. You know, so all the examples, from so many examples that there are, unlimited examples in Vedic history, then the examples then were a certain amount, right? That were being quoted in all the Puranas and Itihasas and Upakhyans and all that. From that, then Vyasadeva chose some and wrote those down into the 18 Puranas. He chose some of that, not all of it. Was available before in the spoken word, then Jiva Goswami says he took 1/10 of it and wrote it down. And that's what's available here. On the higher planets, even more is available. So now, out of that, then it was seen that this didn't really address the principle of pure, those who are interested in pure unalloyed devotional service, how are they going to conduct their life? Therefore, out of all those examples, then we see that Vyasadeva then chose just a small amount that were like really essential and gave very good direction and put that into Srimad Bhagavatam. So then, that, yeah. So these are relevant examples to our life to see how to deal, how to behave, you know. And we see so many examples that are there. So many examples that are there. I mean, practical examples, because it's all in the form of stories of people's lives and what they did in their life. So it's practical. If we find we're not on that platform, and we say, therefore it's not practical, then we must practice the process by which we can get ourselves to that platform. Right? But we should understand that whatever the good example, if it's followed, we will get a good result. And whatever bad example is shown in the Bhagavatam, if we follow that bad example, we'll also get a bad result. It's not that, you know, Diti and Kasyapa, they're Prajapatis, and because they were not Krishna conscious in conceiving a child, therefore they got demons. And we as Milechas and Yavanas, it's our birthright to not be Krishna conscious when we're conceiving children, but we should get devotees. No, we'll also get demons. But because we're only Milechas and Yavanas, therefore we only get small-time demons. While the Prajapatis, they're very powerful personalities, so when they get a demon, they get a first-class demon. Right? You know, qualified to be killed by the Lord personally. So, whatever. But still, they got the principle is they got a demon. But according to their adhikar, they got a, you know, better quality demon. But demon you will get. Right? And if you are Krishna conscious, then Kasyapa and Aditi, then they have Vamanadeva as their child. You know, and so many other great personalities. So we may say, well, we're not that qualified. But we'll at least get some variety of devotee. So the better our consciousness, the better our qualifications, then the better results we'll get. So the more we endeavor to improve our Krishna consciousness by the process given by the acharyas and examples set by the acharyas, then this will be good. Sometimes someone will say that, well, you know, all these personalities in the Bhagavatam are not in our line, so they're not actually our acharyas. So a lot of these stories and examples that are told are coming from Narad Muni, who somehow or another does happen to be in our line. And the whole examples that were chosen are by Vyasadeva, who also happens to be in our parampara. So the word spoken by the Acharya, that is also considered within the parampara. Right? It's not that, well, Prabhupada's in our parampara, but whatever he said we don't care about, because that's not in the parampara. Right? No, what the Acharya speaks, that is considered non-different. You know, they live in their teachings. Therefore, we get direct association with Narad Muni and Vyasadeva and all these great personalities by hearing their instruction. So whatever is in Bhagavatam is directly in our parampara. So it's all 100% applicable in our lives according to our understanding, realization, and expertise in applying. Like that. That's a very good point.
So, you're making that point about, you know, when we see Guru as Sakshat Daritvana, that we should be that sometimes because of our disqualification we can actually perceive him to be in such position. So there is a similar statement, I remember Gopi Parandana Prabhu was explaining in Upanishads that
love.
That spiritual life actually begins when the living being becomes introverted, meaning that you have two types, extroverted and introverted. So extroverted living entity sees the external situation as a cause and effect of him being in a particular situation, and introverted living being sees himself as a cause and effect of particular situation. And when somebody becomes introverted like that, then the spiritual life begins. So then what's the difference between being introverted and egocentric? Because somebody may be egocentric and, you know, and not very spiritually minded.
Oh, okay. You all hear? As you were saying, the point is that Gopi Pranadana was making that there's two kinds of personalities, extroverted and introverted. So extroverted personality, he sees the situations as very much the cause of what's going on. You know, because they see, they need external stimulus. Without external stimulus, they're not satisfied. So they must go where something's happening, then they will feel happy. An introvert then feels that, you know, themselves are the cause of what is the activities that are going on. And they don't need as much external stimulus. They can create their own stimulus. Like this. So when one starts to become introverted, that's the point at which spiritual life can actually start, because then from there one can start to see the Lord. But then the question comes, what's the difference between this and someone who is what?
Egocentric,
yeah. So the difference is that he made the point it only starts then. Because actually we're not the cause either. It's not the situation, it's not ourselves. It's the Lord that actually, through the material nature, makes things happen. We simply have the desire. That's all. So at one point we have to see that we're also not the doers. You know, we're not the doer, and at the same time no one else is the doer either. It's not that I'm not the doer, but everybody else is the doer. You know, this person made politics against me. It's their fault. They're totally wrong. They're totally in Maya. I want justice. No, they're also not involved. Simply, they had the desire, and we had the desire, and somehow or another the modes of nature matched them up. Right? But it's none of that. So therefore, one has to come to the platform where one doesn't worry about these things. One doesn't get involved. Right? Because it's not worth it. Because we're not. It's not us. It's not us, and it's not them. It's just the modes of nature. Modes of nature make everything happen. Today it's nice. Tomorrow it's turned upside down. It's just the time factor. That's the material nature. We may complain, but that's what we bought into, right? Just like we buy a ticket and go to a horror movie in a theater. we may complain, this is terrible, it's fearful, and I don't like the seats, and I don't like this movie, and you know, why it's so dark in here, and it's stuffy, and there's too many people in here, and this is nonsense, and I don't like this place, it should all change. Well, then why buy the ticket? You know, who bought the ticket? Right? We had the opportunity to serve Krishna. We didn't take it. We decided we wanted to be Krishna. So then Krishna put us here. This is the place to want to become Krishna. I mean, the material world's terrible. So the intelligent person thinks this material nature is the way it is, right? Fire is hot. I don't try to change the fire so it doesn't burn me when I stick my finger in it. Or water is wet. I don't try to change the nature of the water so when I fall in it, I don't get wet. Right? No, that's just the way it is. You learn to work with it and how to engage it in the Lord's service. But you know if you don't deal properly, you're going to get burnt or you're going to get wet. But if I use fire properly, I can cook for Krishna. Right? Then I become purified by using the fire. So material nature is a bad place, and if we follow it nicely, we can become purified. And if we don't follow it nicely, we'll become contaminated. Right? So we ultimately have to get to the point to understand the material nature has to be engaged in Krishna's service. So neither is someone else or the situation the doer, nor are we the doer. The modes of nature are who's doing things. But because we desire them, therefore we are given the result, and therefore we are called to do it. But factually, we're not. Our only doing is desiring. One may say, I didn't desire this bad thing to happen to me, but we did, because in a previous time, we've done the activity by our own choice that would give us that reaction today. Right? That's all. We've just forgotten, that's all. And because we have a short memory, therefore we want to blame everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Yes, go on. Balance. What is the balance between the material knowledge and the spiritual? Means according to one's nature. See, everybody has to know spiritual knowledge. Means the fundamental principles of devotional service and, you know, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It means our relationship with the Supreme Lord and the material nature and that material nature with the Lord. What is that? What is the relationship there between the three? That the living entity and material nature have come from Krishna. The living entity, by engaging material nature in the Lord's service, becomes purified. Then this is the process. So engaging the material energy in the Lord's service is the beginning stages of devotional service. And ultimately it should be that we're developing our love for Krishna. So we follow the process of devotional service to see that we as the living entity firmly establish our relationship with the Lord on the platform of prema. So these elements and those elements that break our attachment to the material nature and increase our attachment to Krishna, that must be taught to everybody. That is knowledge for everybody. As a devotee, as a human being, this must be learned. So that's the main aspects of the vidya. Then the avidya then one needs to know, according to one's conditioned nature, those activities, material activities that will go along with that nature, that can be used in the Lord's service. And then one has to see, where are those learned? Right? Where are those would be learned? So generally, except for, you know, generally, how do you say? Yeah. So one has to see that. Then accordingly, whether they have Brahminical, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra nature, then they are taught different things. Some of them you learn in the school, but so many things you learn out of the school in the material world. I mean, as it is, except for, you know, at least what they call in America, they call them community colleges, you know, or let's say a art school. Very few others means, or if you go to a medical school or a law school, you know, or you take, let's say, accountancy, then most others do not actually prepare you for the practical life outside. Regular general education doesn't train you in that. Just because you went to you know, high school or went to university and got yourself a BA doesn't mean that you are qualified to hold down a job or know anything, because it's very general. So unless you specialize in an area very much of your interest and nature, you haven't been prepared anyway, even according to the modern system. Since when has history ever gotten anyone anywhere in the material world? You know? Right? Any big, you know, rich, wealthy, influential, powerful, you know, person is in that position because they knew that in 1066, at the Battle of Hastings, that England, it was the only time they were defeated. Anyone has made their first $1 million because they knew that? Yes or no? I would probably doubt it, but maybe there isn't a case. But I remember in high school that at the beginning of the history term, that the teacher went up and in 3 foot high numbers put 1066. Right? And they said, if nothing else you remember from this whole, you know, history course, if you just remember this date, that this was the day that the British, it was only time they were defeated, right? Then I will consider this class successful. So the teacher's class was successful. I couldn't remember anything else. So what was taught in the first 5 minutes, I remembered that. But I don't think that that has had any influence on my life. I wouldn't know where Hastings was. I wouldn't know who fought in the battle, you know, like that. I don't even know who, you know, what was, you know, what was going on at all. But I do remember 1066, the Battle of Hastings. But I've never used it once in my life. This is probably the first time I'm ever using it. You know? This is it. So the thing is since when is it? So the balance means is that which is practically can be used by the living entity. Even in mathematics, who uses beyond arithmetic in their general day-to-day life? Right? I mean, I went through 2 years of calculus because I liked it. You know? And I hardly even use arithmetic. Right? You know, calculus, I don't think I've ever had an opportunity to use it once in my life. You know? Like that. So, you know, what is the meaning? So, what is actually applicable in your life that you have to see? So, that means some practical application, some art must be there. Either a fine or a skilled trade is an art, or just the art of work, you know, like these guys here carry mud on their head. It's an art, how they cut the mud, how they lift the baskets, how they carry it on their head. But they know that art, right? Or the art of business, or the art of management or administration, you know, or the various arts that a Brahmin uses in cooking, you know, dressing the deity, these kind of things. Right? And then the shastra behind that to make that art work. To do deity worship, dress the deity, there's a whole science behind it, the whole shastra behind it. But one should know that. If you want to actually manage on the platform of a kshatriya, you have to know the shastra, what's behind it. Right? Like that. If you really want to please the Lord in your music and that, then it's recommended, you know, at least on the devotional side is the main, but if you can also, if you have the capacity, learn some of the shastric aspects of what is music and its grammar, and very nice. So that's the balance, is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then one's own art, and then the shastra that backs up that art, or gives its connection, that art, that the art's connection to the Lord. That's what must be learned. And then depending upon what it is, if the person is going to be a musician or a carpenter, Gurukul may not be the ideal place to learn. Right? Gurukul was for learning character. Right? A businessman would send his child to Gurukul. The Vaishya would send his child to the Gurukul. Not to become a great, not to learn business, but to become a, you know, a qualified human being. The father or the uncle or some other person, they'll teach them the business. Because that's the art. So, depending upon what you want, but if it's you want to be a clerk, you know, the Shudra activities, you don't learn that aspect, how to be a clerk in the Gurukul. You learn how to be a human being. Because a Shudra is a human being. You learn how to be a clerk from somewhere else. Therefore, then you graduate from the Gurukul at an age, and then go to some other school and learn that. And if you feel that, therefore then, how you say? Therefore, you know, then they should start at an early age at another educational institution, then that should be done. You know? But you don't go to a law school and say, well, if they don't make it in law, can you teach them medicine also? You know, nobody would ever say that. So, you know, Gurukul means for training the higher qualities of human being. So those can only be learned if someone very dynamically tries to learn it. You know, so that means the quality of the student, quality of the teacher, and quality of the education. That all must be balanced. Of that would be. Purana, that you see how others in the past have taught in the histories, then your grammar, Sanskrit grammar, because that teaches logic and everything. Subhekshan was just telling that Prabhupada points out in one of the purports in what, Chaitanya Charitamrita? That in one of the purports, quoting a purport of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he takes a Gita shloka, Upanishadic shloka, and shows by the rules of Sanskrit grammar how God must be a person, and you know we're His servant. We must, you know, surrender to Him, and this way defeat Samayavad flaw, just using the Sanskrit grammar. So generally, through the process of the grammar, would teach the process of logic, the histories that are there. The Dharma Shastra, because then you know how to impart the knowledge, because that's part of the thing, how to deal with the student, how the student should deal with the teacher. Like this. then what is the nature, because the psychology must be there, so then the aspects of the astrology, the aspects of the Ayurveda, you know, then those aspects show how people work and function. Then, you know, other aspects, then technical from the Puranas, then they also show how the material nature works, how people's mentality works. And then we have the devotional scriptures of the Acharyas, where they take that and break that down finally according to the devotees, how you say? Yeah, to the devotional outlook. So like that, one can take from all those places. Because just as a king must run his kingdom based on the scriptural evidence of the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, a Brahmin will also function according to that. So the art can be learned separate from that, but then you may get the subject across, but then we find the difficulty comes is that we don't get across the culture. And so if we teach these subjects based on, you know, the Vedic literatures and the Vedic culture, then we're able to get the culture across along with the academic subject. And so the actual purpose is to get the culture across. That's the real purpose of education. Because if you have a cultured person, then they're always appreciated. And if then they're educated, then they're appreciated even more. But if a person is educated but not cultured, no one really appreciates them. Like that. Does that make any sense? No. Is that okay, or?
Yeah.
What time is it now?
According to this knowledge, it could be considered the Shastra.
Yes, the 14 books would be the Shastra for teaching. Yeah, basically is from all of them you can understand how to teach and that, because they all are based on Krishna. And teaching means giving Krishna. Either means in the form of the spiritual understandings or how he works through the material nature and how the modes of nature work on us. You know, so if modes of nature work on the body, then you can see in Ayurveda how they work on the body from outside. That's why inside influences, or diet, particular lifestyle, like that, one will see there. How it is by outside influences, that'll be your astrology, your Vastu Shastras, you know, the like that. How it's the Adharma, or the whole cultural scene is affecting, that'll be your Dharma Shastras, your Puranic histories, and this. So they're all, it's that, yeah. That's the right conclusion. Is all the 14 books are the Shastra behind the art of teaching. What time is it now? 10 to 7. What's your point?
There's a question on the point you made before about the faith.
About the faith?
Yeah. We were talking that the faith is a basis for all the different stages of devotional service.
Hmm.
So what's the nature of the devotional faith? Because the kind of conventional understanding of the word faith is that it's something you believe in exists, but you actually really don't know if it exists. So in the same way, where the realization, actual perception of Krishna comes in.
The faith.
Yeah.
Question is on the faith, then. But what is it? Generally, one thinks is just, you know, some feeling, some emotion. That's why Prabhupada says that the philosophy without religion is mental speculation, because then it's dry. And then religion without philosophy is just sentiment, because there's no actual foundation for it. So one has to have both. So by studying the scriptures, associating with devotees, then one gains the understanding. And that knowledge then carries you to the point where that faith then becomes pure love for Krishna. Then at that time, all the knowledge in the material world and that's not what makes you function as a devotee. Your love for Krishna does. But until that time, then it's very helpful to take advantage of the resources of the Vedic knowledge, who tell us who we are, who the material nature is, and who Krishna is, and what's the relationship. and how to perform devotional service, and what is prema bhakti. I think we should end here. Okay. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.